Right now, we're less than 70 days away from the general election in November. Before then, we have presidential debates, speeches, campaign visits, a surprise visit to Mexico now to check out. And the presidential race isn't the only game in town. Some familiar names are duking it out for congressional spots. We're joined now by Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst for 538.com. He joins us every Wednesday to give us the latest in national politics. Harry, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back.
Well, let's look at the latest polling, and I know you've been watching for the latest polling here in Wisconsin. We're going to spend some time on the show later on the Marquette poll. Looking at it, what do you see?
I mean, obviously, you see what I see, and that is that we've seen a tightening race both in Wisconsin and nationally. You know, the Marquette poll and the Monmouth poll that came out today as well both show the race within 5 percentage points among likely voters. And that's basically, those polls are representative of what we see nationally. That is, Hillary Clinton still has a lead. It's clear she has a lead, but that lead is smaller than it was at the beginning of the month, which shouldn't necessarily be so surprising given that the convention bounce has clearly worn off, and that's what normally happens. But I think some people are surprised because I think they thought, oh, my God, Hillary Clinton has this 10 or 15-point lead in Wisconsin. Donald Trump has no chance. Still, we got a long way to go. We still got 2 months. Let's see where we are in a month's time. Hillary Clinton's a favorite, but this game isn't over yet.
Harry, when you look at a change like that, a big drop for Hillary Clinton's lead, do you look at last month's or this month's poll as maybe a fluky outlier, or were both of them right given the moment they were taken?
I think that there are a few things that are going on. Number one, a poll can be accurate without it being predictive, right? The poll can be a correct gauge of what's going on at the moment without necessarily telling us what's going to happen tomorrow. So I think that's one thing. I think the other thing you need to keep in mind is when you look at likely voters, specifically the way that the Marquette poll asked, and you'll get into this perhaps a little bit later, but they basically take those who are definitely going to vote on Election Day, and I think that there were a lot of Republicans who were very deflated after the Republican National Convention and Democratic National Convention, so that as I think I mentioned last time, I think the registered voters perhaps tells a little bit more of a story. That is, that the race was, I believe it was something like 10 percentage points lead for Hillary Clinton last time among registered voters. It's now 5. So there was a closing, but I don't think it's nearly as big as perhaps the 15 to say 3 or 4 or 5 point gap that the polls now show among likely voters.
So some Republicans who were on the fence now resigned to voting for their candidates, even if it's Donald Trump.
I think that that's probably right. I think it's that they resigned to, and I think they see, hey, wait a minute, you know, we don't like Hillary Clinton. We might not love Donald Trump, but we really, really don't like Hillary Clinton. And so I think that there's some coalescing of the base that's going on, or at least some coalescing of Donald Trump's base that's going on. But I think the other thing that's also true, and we've seen this nationally, is it isn't so much that Donald Trump's numbers have risen as much as it is that Hillary Clinton's numbers have fallen. And I think that, look, I think it's easy to get lost with all the bad news that you hear about the Donald Trump campaign, that Hillary Clinton is the second most disliked candidate running, at least since we've had numbers going back on that 40 years. And there's a reason why there's so many undecided and why so many people are willing to say that they're going to vote for either Gary Johnson or Jill Stein. And that's because both candidates, just simply put, aren't well-liked.
Yeah, 20%, something like that, in this new poll said no preference. They're not going to vote for either Trump or Clinton. Are you seeing something like that at the national level, or are we especially disliking both the candidates here in Wisconsin?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure it's necessarily up to that level nationally, but if you look back over the past campaigns, this is unusual. So if you go back to, say, 4 years ago, about 10% of the electorate was saying that they weren't going to vote for Mitt Romney or weren't going to vote for Barack Obama nationally. Right now, that number is closer to 20% nationally. That looks much more like a campaign of, say, 20, 30, or especially 40 to 50 years ago, where voters weren't necessarily tied up as much in their partisan or their party ID in choosing who are they going to vote for. So this is a campaign of old. This is a campaign that could potentially move. And so I keep my eye out on the ball. Hillary Clinton's still a favorite, clearly so, or perhaps not as much as those polls earlier this month might have led some to believe.
Right. Those undecided voters could ultimately break one way or the other for Trump or Clinton, or as you mentioned, a third party candidate, or it might be, you know, Netflix binge session on Election Day. We just don't know at this point.
I mean, we don't know. Look, the sample size on presidential elections is very, very small. And I think we learned during the primary season that when you have small sample sizes, you shouldn't take anything to the bank. This isn't like a baseball season where you play 162 games and you play that every single year and you can run the models over and over and over again. You know, we're really dealing with a sample size of 15 to maybe 20 elections in some cases on which we're judging how certain we should be that someone who's leading at this point can win. So I'd be very, very careful. Note that Hillary Clinton has held a lead, but that lead is not as secure as I think some people have thought it is.
We are very carefully considering the presidential election with Harry Enten from 538.com. Big in the news today, Harry, Donald Trump, last-minute trip to Mexico City, meeting Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto. This was a surprise. I don't think people knew this was coming. How is the Trump campaign framing this trip? What do you make of this?
I think there are a few things. It was a surprise. They kept it pretty much under wraps. They did a good job of doing that. It didn't really leak until last night that this was, in fact, going to happen for sure. I think that there are a few things going on. Number one, I think Donald Trump has been trailing Hillary Clinton on the commander-in-chief poll question. Most people, even if they don't like Hillary Clinton, believe that she's ready to do the job day one. They don't feel the same way on that question about Donald Trump. So I think this is a chance to elevate his commander-in-chief level. Number two, I think it probably doesn't hurt him so much among Latino voters. Look, he's already doing quite poorly among them. He's running basically even with Gary Johnson. So this is a chance to potentially pull it off. And number three, I think what this shows with Donald Trump is I think a lot of people have thought Trump is too sort of, he likes the sound of his own voice. He's not willing to listen to other people. And I think that this gives some vibe that, hey, even if he believes what he believes on immigration, he's at least willing to potentially consider other options. So I think at the end of the day, the Trump campaign knows it's losing and wants to try and shake things up a little bit, and this might give him a chance to do that.
Let's listen to his running mate, Indiana Governor Mike Pence, speaking on Fox News this morning about the trip and what he says it says about Donald Trump's leadership skills.
I guess Hillary Clinton is still processing whether or not she's going to go or when she's going to go. And Donald Trump gets an invitation to sit down with our neighbor to the south. He makes a decision to go, to sit down, because he understands that all negotiations begin with relationships. And that's what's going to begin today. And I expect in 69 days, when Donald Trump's elected president of the United States, these two men are going to have a better opportunity very quickly to move both of our nations forward toward law and order, ending the drug trade, and in the United States, ending the flood of illegal immigration that is harming our economy. And frankly, it has brought violence to the streets and tragedy to too many American families.
So we've been talking for quite a while. Actually, it's been a while since we talked about it. The idea that Donald Trump, Harry, was going to turn to, you know, acting more presidential. Donald Trump says he was going to be so presidential we'd be bored with him. Is this maybe a sign he's going to do this? Hey, a president meets with leaders of neighboring countries, sits down. Here's Donald Trump doing that.
I mean, it's one small step for man, right? It's an effort to do that. You'd like, if you're a Donald Trump fan, probably to see more steps like this. I will say that tonight, when, you know, he's going to be giving a speech in Arizona on immigration, he's supposedly not going to really pivot towards the center on the issue. But I think that Donald Trump's problems haven't necessarily been on where he stands on the issues. It's how he articulates those viewpoints and how people see him. So I think that this is a step. I think it's probably a smart move at the end of the day, as long as he doesn't get embarrassed by the president there in the press conference that's going on currently. But, you know, look, I don't think this is a game changer at the end of the day, but if it's part of a small step that ties up with other small steps, that's how I think you can sort of string together a road for Donald Trump to win the presidency.
Quick thoughts on that immigration speech scheduled for this evening in Phoenix, Arizona. You mentioned he's been saying some different things in different ways about immigration. I mean, he really rode the immigration issue, the wall, deportations through the primaries. That's what really riled up the crowds for him. Does he risk losing his solid base that got him through the primary if he appears to be waffling at all on that issue?
I mean, that's a question. I think if he came out and made a complete, 180 on the issue, that he could. But at the end of the day, these are people that, they are children to Donald Trump's father, and children tend to love their father no matter what exactly happens. I don't think anything he's said so far is going to make them change their mind. That base really likes him. At the end of the day, though, what he needs to do is expand upon that, say, 35 to 37% that he's been getting in most of the national polls. And I think that this type of thing can't necessarily hurt. I might have gone on a different issue. I might have attacked Hillary Clinton on economic issues, Social Security, for example. But at the end of the day, he's chosen this. It can hurt. I'm not sure it's going to help, though.
Hillary Clinton, meanwhile, had a speech on American exceptionalism, that's usually the kind of the Republican talking point more than the Democratic talking point. People have said she's, reaching out to Republicans unhappy with Trump, getting some endorsements from them. Is there a risk that she loses the Democratic base or maybe those Bernie Sanders supporters who were met with her to begin with?
That's a real question. I think that she's trying to play both sides of the issue, right? But what we do know is that when you ask people who are voting for either Jill Stein or Gary Johnson, those tend to be people who would be more likely to vote for Hillary Clinton than for Donald Trump if they were forced into a two-way. And I think that Hillary Clinton needs to be careful in when she's trying to reach out to those disaffected Republicans that she doesn't necessarily alienate those Jill Stein or Gary Johnson supporters who might be more likely to go for her. But at the end of the day, you're running for president. You want to try and pick up as many voters as possible. I think it's a smart tack, but it needs to be done carefully because the last thing that she needs in a year in which people have been willing to vote for outsiders, at least in the primary, the presidential primary, she doesn't want Donald Trump to be able to take up that mantle and say, Hillary Clinton's just one of the crowd. She doesn't want that to happen. But I do think she's not hurting herself as long as she's tactful in accepting these Republican endorsements.
Harry, I want to talk about last night's primaries, congressional and Senate races around the country, the massive wave of anti-incumbent sentiment. Well, you've got Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz of Florida, a lot of Democrats unhappy with her, Senators John McCain and Marco Rubio, Arizona and Florida, facing face-offs in their primaries, and they all won pretty handily. What do you make of all that?
They all won. None of those were big surprises if you were looking at the poll numbers. I think that it kind of puts into question why, again, small sample sizes, we shouldn't draw too many examples from. Just because something happened once in the presidential primary didn't mean it was going to happen in the primaries, in the Senate races. Look, these were guys who raised a lot of money and women who raised a lot of money. They had good ties to the communities. They worked hard. They took nothing for granted. We saw the same thing happen in 2014 with the Republicans. They got good nominees through the primary process. They fought for them, and they were able to win in the fall. We're seeing the same thing now with the two parties fighting for their strongest people to come up in the fall. I think that this just generally says that politics is a very fickle game, and that just because one thing works one time doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work another. And just because something worked in this presidential primary in 2016 doesn't mean that in 2020 one of the parties is going to nominate Mark Cuban.
Harry, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst for 538. He joins us every Wednesday at this time to look at the latest in national politics and the presidential election.